There are a couple more things I want to talk to you about. I half wanted to end with this from the previous page in this book. So page 121, and I'll read this again here. What I'm trying to say is that the most essential core of any project is to open. Open, open, open. Create a state of total nakedness, an anima mundi, a connection with a world soul that is non-judgmental and quick to excite. It's not always pleasant. The intelligible world, the world of the familiar, the world in which life is predictable and we feel safe, is annihilated. We're set loose, like Rimbaud's drunken boat, to be plunged into a state of isness, unadorned being. It's amazing.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of consumer culture that you're talking about, because that's to be safe. 50 Shades of Grey, 50 copies of that on a stack.
Well, and to define yourself according to what you own. People, the tendency, that's where status comes from. People base their identity, their sense of self, on how much they possess, how much money is in the bank. I mean, this is one of the faults of American culture, which I think earlier on in 19th century people, philosophers like Emerson and writers like Thoreau and Whitman, tried to work against those tendencies, and I don't think they succeeded. Because now I think we're in a situation where that is, for people, that their idea of fulfillment is to be filled with, be able to buy material goods.
Or as McClure said, buying stacks of cheesy things to prove yourself?
Yeah, exactly.
So Doesn't this have to crash? It's inevitable,
yeah,
isn't it?
It isn't sustainable, because it is false, basically. It's a falsehood. I think that's why there's so many... I heard... Not long ago, somebody said that they had discovered high amounts of antidepressants in the tissue of the fish in Puget Sound.
Right.
There must be enormous amounts of antidepressant medication going to Puget Sound for that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I can see why. There's a lot of anxiety. It's just, material things are not fulfilling. They really aren't.
How does one open in a culture like this?
Well, I don't know. It's tough. One thing you can do is try to find whatever community you can find of like-minded people. It still exists. A lot of these people have been expulsed, shoved out of the city because it's just too expensive for them. But I think if you keep trying, you can find small communities, readings, any kind of literary or well, Seattle has some fairly decent festivals. So, but I would say Bumper Shoot used to be one, but now that's gotten insanely expensive. But try to find a community, whatever you can, in the city. We do have a fairly decent art museum. You know, there's that. Remnants here and there, shreds of idiosyncrasy, like Pike Place Market, places like that.
In addition to being the hottest real estate market in the country, it's my understanding that Seattle also is tops or near the tops in the new trend for home sharing. In other words, you know, you live in a house with three other people because of the high costs of living.
Yes.
That's how some people are coping. They're taking on roommates.
Right. I think it's probably national, but it might be more intense here.
I think
probably
that's what
happening with greater frequency here in Seattle.
That's what I think they're saying, yes.
Yeah, and yeah, I know. I've been thinking about that because I do feel like I was really lucky to have attained adulthood at a time when apartments were much more affordable and you could live by yourself. And I go back in time and remember occasions in which I did have to share a space. I lived on a bus for a while. There was I think there were four of us altogether, maybe five of us. There were bunks built into the bus, and so we all each had our own bunk in the bus, and then the bus was parked next to a house, and the owner, the guy that owned the bus, owned the house, and he would let us come in and use the kitchen and bathroom, and it was not an ideal situation. Eventually he got fed up with it, and one morning we got up, collectively arose and went to the house, and it was winter, it was November, it was very cold, we could share our breath, frost was forming in the windows, and there was a note attached to the door saying we couldn't get in, we had to leave, that we could no longer rent the space in the bus. And what prompted that, to this day it's a mystery. One of us must have pissed this guy off for some reason, or maybe his wife had finally had enough of us. I don't know what it was, but we had to find a place together. And for a period of time, I was fine living with other people. I kind of enjoyed it. But something happened at some point. Circa the time I turned, right around the age 21, 22, or I was married too during that period, and I got divorced. Shortly after that divorce, I needed solitude. I got very fussy about quiet, and I needed solitude. And I was fortunately I was able to afford places for the most part. You can't do that now, and I don't know how these young people, I don't know how they manage when they get to be like, you know, 25, 26, and into their 30s. Because I forget what the actual amount is. I think it's 20. You have to make $21 per hour in a 40-day work week to be able to afford just a basic one-bedroom apartment in Seattle now. Is it $21?
I don't know. I've not seen
it. It's quite a bit.
But I would imagine. I think the average cost of a one-bedroom is $1,900.
Wow. That is a lot. That's a lot, yeah. And so that's.
But they have programs like the multifamily tax exemption, for one. Yeah. There's other housing groups that are creating low-income housing. There was a recent city council budget passed with a pledge for something like 2,500 more units of that. And there are three new tent cities that are being authorized by the mayor. So not that that's an answer, but that's a recognition that there's a homeless, there's a housing crisis, and not just a homeless crisis, a housing crisis.